This episode of Extra Serving is sponsored by Bel Gioioso Cheese. Bel Gioioso Cheese is a family-owned and operated company specializing in artisan Italian cheesemaking. Using only natural ingredients and fresh, local Wisconsin milk, master cheesemakers handcraft a full line of exceptional cheeses guided by a commitment to quality and a respect for tradition. Ask your distributor about Bel Gioioso's award-winning fresh mozzarella, burrata, ricotta, mascarpone, American grana, and parmesan. At Bel Gioioso, every cheese is a specialty. Hi, and welcome to this week's episode of Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I'm your host, Holly Petrie, here at the latest episode. And I'm here to introduce my lovely co-host for the episode.
I am Sam Mokas, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News.
I am Leanne Zinsmeister, managing editor of NRN.
And I am senior food and beverage editor, Brett Thorne.
Welcome, everyone.
Yes, welcome.
Thanks.
Those who are watching, Sam is in a new location, though it looks the same.
Yes, I have moved. But yeah, I am apparently a very boring aesthetic because I set up a new shelf and everybody has pointed out that my new shelf looks just like my old shelf. So
I did not say that.
Okay, that's true. That's fair. Holly did, though. Brett, I don't think you've had an opportunity to say it yet.
No, this is my first time seeing you, but I will say that you're nice to look at anyway, Sam.
Oh, thanks, Brett. That means a lot. I was very proud of you guys for flying solo last week. Good job. Good job. You handled things without me.
Did you listen?
Yeah.
That was totally a lie. That was a total lie.
I listened to part of it. That counts, right?
What if we left like Easter eggs? Like, oh, if Sam listens, he'll definitely comment on this.
You know how and I know like, Sam didn't listen? Because I said I missed Sam, and Sam would have commented on it if he heard that. And that's how I know he wasn't listening.
Because I know you definitely didn't miss me.
See, that's how I know that he wasn't listening, because he would have commented if he heard me say that.
I listened to the beginning. I just wanted to see how much you guys did miss me. But at the beginning of it, you were like, well, let's just plug away. So I'm like, all right, well, fine without me.
See, that's how I knew you didn't listen, because I said, you know, I really did miss Sam. I said it pretty soon on. So you know what? You really did not listen to much of the podcast.
that means that I trust you.
Caught red-handed.
I trust you. That's all.
That's good.
All right. Well, Leanne, you went on an exciting trip this week. Do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
I did. I was down in Baton Rouge on Monday and Tuesday with Raising Cane's. They host an event usually every year, but this was the first time they've done it since 2019, where they fly out their newest employees to Baton Rouge, which is where Raising Cane's was founded. And they try to immerse their employees into Baton Rouge and show them really like the core of the brand and what it's about. Raising Cane's is expanding quickly. They're going to be in New York City later this year, I think, or maybe next year. So their goal with this is really to make sure that they're maintaining their Louisiana culture at all of their units. So they invited me down to tag along and record everything that was going on. And it was a lot of fun. There was a crawfish boil. We visited the first three Raising Cane's locations. We took a tour of the stadium at LSU. I got to go down on the field. I'm a Pac-12 girl, but that was still pretty cool. So it was a really great event. Everyone I talked to had nothing but great things to say about it. And yeah, I had a great time. I'm glad they invited me. You'll be able to see more about that on our Instagram account in the hopefully near future. So it was a great event. I think it's a great way to maintain your culture as you grow into, you know, Raising Cane's started as just the one location in Baton Rouge, and now they're a huge, I think they have more than 650 stores now. So
I'm psyched I'm psyched about them coming to New York, because I hear they're awesome, even though it's just chicken tenders and Texas toast and cane sauce. But my nephew went to Tulane and was a big fan when he was there.
It's very simple, straightforward, but it's delicious, which counts for something for sure. I think, Leanne, you mentioning that word culture, it's funny because you I feel like the restaurant industry has been talking about culture for 10 years, at least, maybe more. But right now, the conversation is more about retention and, you know, culture being a very key part of that. So it's interesting because, you know, there have been a lot of these things kind of pop up where we see companies hosting franchisee conventions or, you know, just sort of in person. Now that we can do these in-person things again, this is a really key component to that idea of retention, because if you can sell your employees and your franchisees on the system and keep them around, then that's a big solution to the labor issue going on today. Not just how do I find employees, but how do I keep everybody happy and make sure that they're invested in what we're doing.
And it also helps you maintain the culture if you keep the employees who understand the culture.
Yeah. And I think it shows the employees that the company, you know, cares about them. It's a big investment to fly. I think there were 300 people there this week, you know, flew in 300 employees from different parts of the country, put them up in a hotel overnight. Wow. You know, it shows that they're willing to invest in their employees, and therefore the employees are willing to, you know, give it their all and really invest in the brand.
That's great. And then Brett, you actually went to the CKE headquarters. They had some big news this week as well.
Yes, I went to Franklin, Tennessee, and was struck by how they wear masks differently in the Nashville area, in that in New York, we wear masks a fair amount, but we often wear them badly with our noses sticking out. And I want to say to people, hey, it's been a couple of years now. If you're going to wear a mask, like, I know how to wear shoes, but I don't like wearing shoes, but I do it and I do it correctly. Same with a mask. In Tennessee, not a lot of masks, but the people who wore the masks wore them correctly. And that was nice to see. But mostly I spent the time at the CKE headquarters in Franklin, Tennessee, where they showed me some stuff that is still a secret for another week. But I also talked to them about their rebranding, which involves a lot of upgrading of the physical space, but especially the outside, because more of their customers are going through the drive-thru and never cross the threshold of the actual interior of the restaurant. So that's their big focus. In the meantime, they're still working on a lot of the moving parts of their rebranding, including trimming down the menu, and they're experimenting with a bunch of new equipment and technology, things like better oil filters so that the staff who don't want to clean the oil or change the oil don't have to do it as often, which also is really a retention play as well as a clean oil play. And then they're working on different types of possibly AI that they can use. And they're just, it's a whole refocus on what the company is doing internally and how they present that externally. And there's a lot of rebranding going on these days, or they're calling it rebranding, no matter what it is. Like Noodles & Company, what, last week just said, we're rebranding, and it's our new brand positioning is Uncommon Goodness, which sounds nice, but really the fundamentals of it are a bunch of new benefits for their employees, including stock options for managers and payment for like reimbursement for life things, anything from medical care to mental health. They will pay, I think, up to $625 a year for you to have your home clean. So that's pretty cool.
Another labor thing, right? I mean, another retention, mm-hmm. a way to make your people happy. Although what I think is interesting about that, to your point, Brett, is, you know, usually when you said, it used to be when in the past you say rebrand, of course, you're updating the logo, a new color palette, maybe doing some upholstery on your furniture in your restaurant, whatever. And so now it feels like there's this more sort of comprehensive, holistic approach to rebranding that's going on that has to take into account the state of the restaurant industry, which has to take into account the labor thing. So even going back to back of the house in the kitchen, how do you make things simpler, more efficient for your employees so that they're happier working there? Because if they have to change out the oil themselves and they grumble about it, well, they're probably going to look for another job where they don't have to do that. So it is really interesting to see these holistic rebrand approaches that are not just, hey, customers, look how shiny, flashy, and new we are, but also, hey, employees, look how much we're modernizing and making things better for you too.
That's true. And, you know, but before the pandemic, labor was the number one issue. And as we work through the pandemic, labor is even more of a crucial issue. And it's just always an issue in the restaurant industry.
It's an issue in every industry. Labor
well, these days, for sure.
Right. Labor is just an issue.
Yep.
So Sam, I would like for you guys to pay to have my apartment cleaned, please.
I think it's going to cost more than $625 just for one time, Brett.
Wow. So you haven't even seen my apartment, but you've heard my stories.
Your stories are a little scary.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would want to clean your apartment, Brett, but having just had some carpets cleaned, I can tell you what, cleaning is not cheap. And it's not awesome. And now that I am basically making daily trips to Target and Lowe's, they are not sponsoring this episode, but Target and Lowe's have been real lifesavers for me having just moved.
Not picking Lowe's and not Home Depot.
Well, it's funny you shout that out because I was a Home Depot guy, but there is not a Home Depot within 5 miles of my new home, but there's like 14 Lowe's within 5 miles of my new home. So
14.
Apparently Columbus is more of a Lowe's city than a Home Depot city. But point being is inflation. Whoa. Because these receipts that it's this stuff ain't cheap. And so to furnish a house in this era,
you're buying things like tire swings. Those are quite expensive. That was a very nice outdoor swing you bought those children.
I didn't buy it. No, I've had that for years. But yes, I did put up my old swing, but I did buy them. We did buy them we had to buy like an outdoor toy holder, you know, you got to throw all your toys into. And I mean, the thing, I don't even want to say how much it costs because I'm kind of embarrassed how much money I'm paying for these things. But you know, it's just inflation is real. And customers are feeling it. I don't remember how we started this conversation, but it ends with me saying inflation is real.
I want my apartment clean.
Right. Oh, I'm trying to divert you guys from asking me for more benefits is what I'm trying to do. Yes.
Well, we can talk about inflation because we're talking about all of the earnings that have come up. Leanne, you are our earnings expert. We've still had more earnings. They are not ending yet. So please tell us more about the earnings, which I know consisted of a lot of talk about inflation and what's going to happen with inflation.
Yeah, it was definitely way fewer earnings than last week. I'm sure our listeners are like, please don't let this woman talk about earnings again, because I just went on and on last week. It's the same trends as always, inflation, prices. As far as I could tell, every brand that we covered earnings for this week reported an increase in same store sales, which is great. Generally, restaurants are recovering. First Watch is a chain that I'm always interested to look at because they went public so recently. And they were also one of the only restaurant brands not to give in to menu price increases until early this year. They didn't increase prices at all in 2021. So they've now raised prices a little bit this year. They say they still have room to increase more if they need to. But their same store sales were up 27%. In the first quarter, even though they cited, Omicron happened in Q1. They're based in Florida, I want to say, but they have a lot of units up north. And they said, winter weather was rough this year, but they still managed to grow traffic and sales. And they're saying that as they look at Q2 so far, they saw like huge numbers on Mother's Day. And then similar things at Texas Roadhouse, which was the other full service company to report this week. They have raised menu prices again. Their same store sales were up 16% at company units, 20% at franchises. Both of those brands talked a lot about technology that they're developing and implementing. So I think we're going to see a lot more of that talk, especially at full service brands, things like paying at the table, wait lists. First Watch has a new like kitchen display system that they're using that now the units that have it are performing better than the ones that don't. So those are the trends at the full service units. We also saw same store sales increases at Sweetgreen, which Holly covered this week, and Shake Shack, which Brett covered. both of those fast casual companies have said that their suburban stores are outperforming their city units. Shake Shack's been saying that for a long time. Sweetgreen is just starting to crack into suburban markets, and they're already seeing that trend. Same store sales are up for both of them. And then over at El Pollo Loco, same store sales are up almost 8% because of Berea. Am I saying that right, Brett?
You know, it depends. Some people say Berea, some say Berea. So if any of the listeners want to let us know how they pronounce it, let us know.
You call it, it's very trendy right now. It's driving sales at El Pollo Loco. They also launched a huge like TikTok influencer campaign. So things were good in the earnings world this week. Things are going well, I would say, in spite of the continued inflation. Now, Lisa Jennings just reported yesterday that inflation growth is slowing, but it's definitely still there. So going to continue to be a concern. So that's my financial update.
Well, thank you for that. It's so informative. We love to get a good financial update from you, Leanne.
Oh, good.
Any thoughts, Sam, Brett?
Well, we are getting ready our top 500 report for June. So just to piggyback off of what Leanne's talking about with full service restaurants, we have the data, we've looked through the data, and just to tell you, spoiler alert, the resurgence of full service restaurants is, just insane, which you can kind of expect for how hard they were hit in 2020. Their 2021 numbers are just as much of a swing back. But one thing I'll comment on that is really interesting and kind of speaks to some of the things that Leanne was just talking about that the companies are reporting is it seems like the average unit growth is really outpacing average unit volume growth is really outpacing the unit growth. So in other words, sales per restaurant is increasing more than actual new restaurants being built, which tells me that restaurants are getting more money out of each individual location. So this, it's kind of apples and oranges, but it's a good way to say, how do you compare restaurants today versus what was going on in the pandemic? Well, look at their average unit volume because, how much money they're getting out of each restaurant. This is across the board, full service and quick service, which is restaurants are becoming more efficient. They're using tools to get more, they're turning customers over more quickly in full service restaurants, which means you can, and they're doing that through technology and automation and other things. So anyway, those are all things we're looking at for the top 500. And I just think from the sales reporting we've had in the last couple of weeks, it's there. We have some hints at what's really driving some of those increases across full service restaurants, but really the whole industry.
Well, and I think the pandemic really helped, as awful as it has been, it helped restaurants get better, leaner, stronger, faster because they had to.
Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And now this is our last regular episode before the NRA show.
Right.
So yes. We are about to go into NRA show craziness next
about
week.
You. I've been here for weeks.
Yeah, we've been in the thick of it.
Next week is our first NRA preview scheduled podcast. Then we will have some podcasts live from the show. So get ready for those. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be really energetic. We're ready to be back at the show. We're ready to be in Chicago again. So it's going to be great. I get into Chicago Tuesday. I'm there for an entire week. So I am ready to go. I'm pumped up. So it's going to be exciting.
I'm already exhausted. I'm already exhausted thinking about being at the NRA show.
Me too.
I'm already packed. I'm excited.
I mean, look, I haven't been to Chicago in 3 years. It's one of my favorite cities in the world. So I'm super excited to be back in Chicago. And I'm excited to see a lot of people I haven't seen in a long time. But yeah, this show is a doozy and I need to be sleeping now.
Rest up, everybody.
Yep.
So Brett, why don't you tell us about who you interviewed today?
It is so incredibly appropriate because what I've been thinking as you guys are talking, you got to be energized, you got to be jazzed, I'm tired, I need a nap. What we all need is coffee. And my guest this week is Felton Jones, the chief roaster of PJ's Coffee in New Orleans. And he's a really interesting guy. We talk about how he got in to being a coffee judger, you know, how he developed his palate for judging and appreciating coffee, and the whole processes of purchasing and roasting coffee and the current special flavor that PJ's coffee has at the moment, which is wedding cake coffee, which spoiler alert is mostly vanilla and almond. But he also talks about how PJ's has benefited from being in New Orleans during all these supply chain issues, because New Orleans is a major import center for coffee into the United States. So the challenge is more getting the coffee out to the different PJ's coffee restaurants. That's more difficult than actually getting the coffee from abroad. There are many interesting things that Felton and I talk about, and I think you're all going to enjoy it.
Can't wait to listen to it. And I'm sure everybody else will love it. If they've stayed this long, they're going to stay for the interview.
Of course.
Well, thank you all so much for being here. And we will talk to everyone next week for the NRA show.
Whoa.
Can't wait.
This episode of Extra Serving is sponsored by Bel Joyoso Cheese. Bel Joyoso Cheese is a family-owned and operated company specializing in artisan Italian cheesemaking. Using only natural ingredients and fresh, local Wisconsin milk, master cheesemakers handcraft a full line of exceptional cheeses guided by a commitment to quality and a respect for tradition. Ask your distributor about Bel Joyoso's award-winning fresh mozzarella, burrata, ricotta, mascarpone, American grana, and parmesan. At Bel Joyoso, every cheese is a specialty.
How you doing, Felton Jones?
I am great. How about yourself?
I am also doing great. I'm excited to talk to you because I love talking about coffee. And I think that's what we're going to do, because you are the roast master, the chief roaster, excuse me, of PJ's Coffee.
Yeah. It's a fancy title for such a simple but yet fun job.
I mean, I bet it's fun. How many PJ's locations are there?
Oh, man, we're upwards of over 140 now.
Wow. So you are in, what's your main job as the chief roaster? What do you have to do?
The most important thing that I do is sourcing coffee. So, working with importers and in some cases working directly with farmers at origin, deciding what coffees fit, our needs. And then that's only part of the magic. So, we start with that. And then the real magic happens in the roasting. And so determining how that coffee is going to be roasted, determining does that coffee work better when it's blended with another coffee, all of those things. So those are kind of the key parts. And then I guess since I'm sort of like the grandpa of the company, I get the opportunity to just have these kind of conversations. And so this is what I love the most. I love to be able to talk and educate on coffee.
Oh, well, that's cool. And how long have you been with PJ's?
I am in year number 27.
Nice. And how did you get into the coffee business?
Just a part-time job, just a little part-time job. And that grew into a full-time position. And then probably the key, anybody that's heard me tell this story, I tell it at the same time. The thing that propelled me was the delivery position opened up. And when that opened up, I took that opportunity to do that because I like meeting and interacting with people. And so I was able to, really connect with the customers and all. And but what it did was it freed me up. So if I had if I did all of my deliveries and got back and there was still, half the day to spare, Phyllis Jordan, our founder, she basically invited me to go and stick my nose in wherever interests me. And so I would hang out with my predecessor, in the coffee lab and pick his brain, and the rest was history. That's, you know, that kind of started the journey there. And there were a few key turning points where he saw something in me that I didn't really know was there, and found a way for me to really start to see it and believe in myself. And the very first coffee that I identified on the cupping table was Guatemala. And then when I realized that I was able to pick that coffee out, I was like, oh, what? So there is something to this. So it was really a confidence thing. And then from there, I just, whenever and wherever I could, you know, get in and grab more information, you know, more education, I did it. So it was all, you know, on the job training and, you know, experience, you know, digging in.
So you were just smelling coffee. You were at a cupping where, to the uninitiated, of which we might have some, you just pour coffee grounds into a cup and then you pour hot water. And often it's a whole bunch of cups and you.
You know it well.
And then you break the crust that's formed by the coffee grounds, and then you inhale, and then you.
You've done a cupping a time or two, haven't you?
I've done a cupping. Well, and the thing is, I've done different kinds of cuppings. Like, I did cuppings with Duncan, and okay. That, you know, you sit at a big, like, it would be an 8-top or a 10-top, but it's just the cupping people, and you keep rotating the table and and slurping and spinning, slurping and spinning, slurping and spinning. And then there are, you know, the pretentious micro roaster cupping where you go and you take one cup and you break the crust, and then you inhale and you discuss all of the different qualities. Oh, I'm getting some blueberry and tobacco. And you do that. And, you know, for Duncan, it's just, is it consistent? Are there any, you know, impurity? That we need to worry about. And then there is the, you know, the more, I guess, cerebral, or, you know, more digging deeper into the specific differences between each coffee, which I'm sure the Duncan roasters also do when they're, in Guatemala sampling the coffee.
But, right.
So what was your cupping where you tasted that first Guatemala and you're like, this is a Guatemala and it tastes different from a Colombian, for example?
For a while it had its own identity. It had its own distinct flavor characteristic that stood out to me. I think I remember at that time describing it as somewhat sweet, you know, and I mean, sweet to us in the coffee world is, you know, kind of like chocolatey. You know, if I say something has a chocolatey undertone, you know, don't go looking for the Hershey bar kind of chocolate. You know, it's like a pure chocolate kind of undertone. And so there was a little bit of sweetness and brightness to the cup, and I liked it. And I think that that's the most important thing. It's not so much of being able to identify a bunch of different coffees. I think the thing for, you know, our coffee drinkers out there that, you know, take it seriously, that they, you know, they try to kind of engage themselves in it. It's just being able to identify with the cup of coffee or the type of coffee that you like, you know, and when you are able to do that, that's when you kind of hit that point of, you're always looking for that, you know, each and every time. And that's when you develop your favorite, you know, and that's how it was for me with Guatemala. Over the years, that kind of wavered a little bit. And that could be from, you know, change in the climate there. That could be, you know, from, you know, going from crop to crop. I mean, you know, maybe they didn't recover as well. Could have been, you know, storms that have affected things, but that's what's really interesting about coffee is, you know, yesterday it was Guatemala, today it's Colombia, and, you know, who knows, you know, tomorrow it could be Ethiopia. You know, it's like, I've seen consistency for a period of time with coffee origins, and then you'll see that consistency kind of waver. And that's why I'm blessed to be in the position that I'm in, because unlike the average coffee drinker, you know, person that just enjoys coffee, you're basically only going to be exposed to whatever you go out and buy and are willing to try at home. Well, I get paid to do, you know, exactly that. And it's just like, I got coffees from all over the world. So, yeah, it's just a welcome experience.
Yeah, that's fun. But at PJ's, there probably is a particular flavor profile or two that you're looking for. Do you guys have a wide variety of different types of coffee? When your PR team always pitches me stuff, it's all, you know, wedding cake flavored coffee and stuff, which has all sorts of syrups and stuff, which is great. But, you know, when it comes to a more traditional, straightforward, maybe black cup of coffee, do you offer a wide variety of different roasts?
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's the difficult part for me is that, listen, all due respect to our flavored coffee drinkers out there, yes. You know, awesome. I mean, they're coffee drinkers too. So, yeah. You know, we can't discredit. And I will be honest, full disclosure, wedding cake is our current seasonal, you know, our current LTO coffee. And if there is a flavor coffee that I will partake in, cold brew wedding cake is, you know, I got a weakness for. It's one of the few flavors that I'll really dive into, but the flavors just have a tendency to garner a lot of attention from both, you know, regular coffee drinkers and, you know, your diehard flavor coffee drinkers. But my struggle is that I do, while I appreciate the flavors, I celebrate all of the other things. So we have, I want to say roughly seven different medium roasts we offer. A couple of them are blends and the rest of them are single origin. So single origin coffees, we offer Sumatra, Ethiopia, Guatemala, Colombia. And then we have a couple of signature blends, you know, that go along with that. And then on our dark roast, we have, you know, our French roast, our French breakfast. Both of those are single origin coffees. And then we have our signature espresso dolce and our Viennese blend, which is the two main coffees that we do, that we use for cold brew at the PJ's cafes. We have a Maple Street and a Roast 35. And those two are the exact same blend. One is just presented as a medium and one is presented as a dark. And then everything else is flavors and decaf.
Right. Yeah, but that's a lot. I didn't know. I guess I haven't been to a PJ's in a while. It's been a while since I was in New Orleans and walked in.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a really wide selection of that your customers can get. I mean,
that's it is. And getting people to be interested in that, you know, we really have to rely on the stores. So, you know, it's sort of sometimes a difficult thing for the cafes, because if you have a coffee that, you know, your customers absolutely love, you want your customers to have what they love, you know, and versus the alternative would be to rotate your coffees so that they can get those different experiences, you know. And I've seen stores struggle with that decision, you know, but for a lot of the customers, you know, I mean, look, I love the fact that so many people are into like what I call high-end brewing at home, whether they know what they're doing or not. You know, everybody goes out and they're looking for the fanciest coffee maker they can find. And, you know, and people give it a shot at home. They give it a try. I always encourage, you know, whenever I speak with people about it, is if I get asked the question, you know, what's the best coffee out there? Which, you know, what's the best way to brew coffee? I'm like, however you like it, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, you drink your coffee every day and, you know, I mean, it's, you make it the way you like, you drink it. The only thing that I could say is that, that makes a really, really big difference is where you buy your coffee from and how fresh it is, because your brewing method and all that can vary, but, nothing beats fresh coffee. You know, and that's one of the things we really pride ourselves on.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you guys have standards for like how old the beans are, and how then also after they're roasting, I'm sure there's a certain amount of shelf life. And how do you
What are your standards for that sort of thing?
So basically, whenever we're sourcing coffees, obviously we want the freshest crop of coffee. So, you know, we're in 2022 now, so there's, so kind of like, say, for instance, in some parts of Central America, they start harvesting in like November, and that harvest will go through like March. So, you know, it's not necessarily a 2022 crop or a 2021 crop. It's like the crop that, you know, carried over from 21 into 22. And then we'll be gearing up, you know, to start seeing some picking, you know, later on this year. And so that's one of the standards, is that we're always looking for the fresh green coffee, the fresh crop. But in regards to after we roast it, our roasting process and our ability to package it very quickly, you know, that is trying to, you know, really harness and lock in that freshness. And, you know, we've been as stingy as saying 90 days and it's done, you know, but we've extended that out, you know, past that, because, you know, it's what you can be that stingy person. You can be that stingy brand, based off of being a certain size, but we've grown immensely, you know, and, you know, we're huge in the Texas market right now. We got New Jersey that just came on board. We're in Colorado. We're getting stores online out on the West Coast. And so we have to be a little bit more lenient, you know, with that. And it's still a great cup of coffee. You know, it really all depends. I mean, you can open up a bag of coffee, and if you don't store it properly at home, you can kill it in a matter of a few days, you know, whereas if you store it properly, you know, I could tell you 90 days or 120 days, but if you take good care of it, you know, who knows how long you get out of it.
Well, and it must have gotten more difficult over the past couple of years with supply chain issues and travel and all that. So
it has, the supply chain issues for us has been more transportation oriented, you know. Now from a cafe perspective, yes, you know, things like paper goods and plastics and things like that. Obviously, you know, we've seen everybody, you know, struggling with those. But as far as our core product, coffee, it's there. It really does help being home-based in New Orleans. New Orleans is like a huge port city for coffee. So there's so much coffee here, you know, in New Orleans. So as I said, it's really more about transportation. It's about moving it around. You know, you know, the remember the old UPS, the old tagline, what can Brown do for you? You know, it's like they were the epitome of, you know, getting things from point A to point B, and, you know, they had all the systems and everything. And seeing, you know, witnessing how supply chain and employment and stuff like that are all affecting even major companies like UPS. We feel pretty blessed and lucky, you know, that we have really not seen major issues as far as, you know, supply chain.
That sounds like you have no problem getting the coffee into New Orleans, but then getting it out of New Orleans can be a bit of
because
of the trucking shortage.
Yeah, it helps though that, you know, we're all going through the same thing no matter where you live. And so while it's some of the most inconvenient, you know, disruptions, they're also at the same time some of the more widely known things, and, you know, to some extent, to a great extent, I'd say, you know, expected and accepted, you know, by customers and consumers, you know. But you know, I don't know, I think the one thing that I've learned through all of this is you know, I've seen signs at restaurants where they say, you know, be kind to the, you know, to your waiter or your waitress. You know, they did show up to work today and they're shouldering the load of all of those that we don't have at work, you know. So but it's definitely supply chain, things could be a lot worse than they have been for us. So I'm grateful that we've been able to, you know, endure it so far.
Yeah, that's great. I don't hear that very often, so that's good to hear. And so how do you spend most of your time? Is it mostly like handling product, managing logistics and stuff like that? Or do you get to just sit around and cup coffee a lot?
So I don't get a chance enough to sit around and cup coffee. And that's one of the things that as we're coming out on the backside of COVID, that, you know, we get a handle on things and really get a handle on this growth. You know, one of the things that I'm going to be focusing on is interacting with customers and cafes alike. So when, you know, to us, there's sort of like these two layers of customers. So all of our cafes, in my opinion, to me, are our customers. And then the end user, of course, are their customers. So I'm working on plans to get out and about and take sort of kind of do like a coffee roadshow where, you know, I take this whole education piece on the road and, you know, make stops at these stores, you know, visit with these guys, maybe kind of address any kind of questions. One thing that I applaud our stores for is that not everybody who, you know, opens up a PJ franchise is a coffee head. You know, they might just be a good business person and they're going to learn about coffee on the way. And that's what we help them with. But over time, you know, imagine all of the self-proclaimed connoisseurs that come into the store as customers. And that's where I kind of, you know, keep myself as a resource to these guys. And I just had a perfect example yesterday. I got a text about this time yesterday evening from one of the stores in Texas. And one of her baristas was talking to a customer and they came up with a question. They texted me and I sent it right back out. But so you'll see a lot of that coming in the very, very near future for me. I'll be, you know, traveling a lot now that we can travel freely a little bit more. I do spend the entire day until the commodities market closes, I think at like 1 o'clock Central. I'm constantly monitoring the market to determine if there's a need to look into, you know, purchasing some futures. But I'm very hands-on here at the plant. You know, I like to get elbows deep in the packaging and the shipping, the roasting, you know, so kind of all over the place, I guess.
Sounds fun. But you started out, you said, in as a part-time job and then in delivery. So you're a people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And there's not much more sociable than drinking coffee with somebody.
Yeah. And then, you know, everything from either existing customers to potential customers or sometimes future franchisees or even employees, I conduct so many tours through the roaster, you know, and that's always pretty intriguing because, you know, it's like, it never seems to get old to me how many times I can bring someone through here. And when I do so, you know, the little simple aspects, you know, to hear you describe a cupping table and what happens at a cupping table, that doesn't happen, my friend. Whenever I'm, you know, I mean, when I tell you that I've actually given tours to people who've never even seen what a coffee bean looks like because they've only seen it in ground, you know, format. So that's always pretty exciting. It's like, you know, it's like witnessing somebody experience Disney World for the first time.
Yeah, any kind of new experience. And they're like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's what it looks like.
Yep.
That was fun.
So, but yeah, putting smiles on people's faces and coffee is, I think we take it for granted sometimes because we partake in it on just such a constant, regular basis. And it's everywhere, you know, it's at the restaurant, it's at the gas station, it's at your house. You go into a grocery store, and a lot of grocery stores, they have a little complimentary thing. It's like everywhere. And my experience with being able to go to a country of origin and actually meet the people and see the process from the very beginning, it was super humbling for me. And every time I get a chance to go back, I've come to like really, really embrace it. It's almost like, it's like therapeutic, you know, it's like, it gives me an opportunity to really not just witness, but for that moment, for that brief moment while I'm visiting, you know, to let go of everything that you thought was important, you know, and just focus on what really is important and how this is those people's livelihoods, you know, and we're not dependent on that. I mean, we're just drinking cup after cup after cup, you know, so whenever I talk with someone and I explain to them that, you know, for every pound of coffee, that essentially represents a tree on a farm, because it takes a full tree to make that 1 pound of coffee. And people are like, are you kidding? I'm like, yeah, and it's picked by hand, you know. So those little nuances just draw an appreciation.
Yeah, it's interesting how ubiquitous coffee is and what a huge commodity market it is. And yeah, and those beans, just like Juan Valdez in those commercials.
So, you know, that's the funniest thing. It's I can mention so many different things about coffee, but man, if people don't know anything about coffee, you know Colombia and you know Juan Valdez, you know, and often I get people say, well, Colombia must be the largest, you know, like they got to be the biggest coffee supplier. And I'm like, no, if you looked at Colombia on the map, you know, well, everybody knows it. Well, yeah, you know, kudos to their marketing team because they came up with a great campaign and it stuck, you know. So, and I think there's even a Juan Valdez coffee chain.
You're in New York City. There are a couple of Juan Valdez coffee places.
Yep.
Brazil's the largest producer, right?
Yeah. Yep. Brazil's the largest producer by far. You know, they have the landscape. And then their landscape affords them to use machines. So they do have hand picking, but they have the you know enough flat land that they've become recognized over the years. And so they can harvest like these millions and millions of pounds of coffee. And they do a lot of it collectively. So like, you know, when we go to Honduras, it's like every nook and cranny that you can think of where they can plant coffee, they do so. Everybody's doing it. And then we rely on all of that coffee to really kind of be brought to one central, you know, purchaser, if you will. And at that point, that's where someone like us, you know, would deal with that, what we would call the mills, the coffee mills, you know. So it's kind of like, you know, grow your little harvest in the backyard. And then once you've harvested, now you can bag that up and you can take that into the city and the mill will buy that from you. And then you can go back home and now you can get ready for, you know, the next crop or what have you.
And so the mill processes all those coffee cherries and dries them however they dry them. And and then you buy the dried green beans.
Correct.
Roast them in New Orleans. Are you in your plant?
Yep. If I go out the front door, I'm looking at the Mississippi River.
Have you guys played with chicory at all? That's obviously a huge thing. At least happy Du Monde and among New Orleanians. I don't know about anybody else.
Yeah. So from a PJ's perspective, so we have two brands. We have our PJ's brand. We have our New Orleans Roast brand. And believe it or not, the coffee and chicory is really not a big mover for us. But the chicory itself is actually our number one seller online. So people are buying just raw chicory, just 100% just plain chicory. And and I've talked to some of these customers and I can't even begin to imagine. I'm sure you've tasted chicory, you know, coffee and chicory before.
Yeah.
Very distinct. You know, and I've spoken with customers who actually brew it as if they're brewing coffee. And, you know, and one customer actually educated me and told me that chicory is actually a probiotic. There's all sorts of applications.
Coffee's a probiotic. You're a probiotic.
Yeah. I mean, go figure.
It's like dried up chicory root, right?
So it's like it's roasted and ground. It looks like maybe coarsely ground coffee.
Oh.
It's an acquired taste. So I mean, you know, that whole history of you know chicory being used to stretch coffee during the war, you know, it's all true. And here in New Orleans, here in Louisiana, it's stuck, you know, and so people really just kind of, you know, I don't know, we're strange people here in New Orleans.
I like chicory and coffee if there's a lot of milk, the way Cafe Dumont does it. They're Cafe Dumont.
Yep. So that's a cafe au lait.
Yeah, I tried it once without milk. No, that was not okay for me.
The interesting thing is, you know, for anyone who's never visited New Orleans, if you ever come to New Orleans for your first time and you go to any of the restaurants in the French Quarter and they serve the coffee in like a little white ceramic cup, you know, beware, because if you see that little orange ring around the top, it's heavily laden with chicory, you know.
We got to put some milk in there.
Got to put some milk in there.
Or a lot of milk. Yeah, it was trendy for a little while in San Francisco a few years ago. I don't know if it still is or not, coffee and chicory.
You know, it's interesting because there's, I want to say there's a brand, there's a pretty well-known brand of cold brew from California that talks about New Orleans-style cold brew, and it's because they actually put a hint of chicory in there, from what I understand.
Interesting. Although you do not put chicory in your cold brew. You said you use your espresso blends for...
Yeah, we use our espresso brew. So we use our espresso blend to derive a cold brew concentrate that is pretty much an ingredient in some of our more popular drinks like our Granita and our Velvet Ice. So the espresso Dolce cold brew is used as an ingredient to a recipe. If you go to a PJ's and you just order up a glass of cold brew, then that's going to be made using our Viennese blend. And the Viennese blend is a 50-50 blend. It's 50% dark, 50% medium. And so the medium helps take some of that bold edge off of the dark, and the dark helps to kind of give a little base to the medium. And so it satisfies, you know, both types of coffee drinkers. But it's a very, very smooth, soothing drink. And man, we've been doing it for a long time. It's pretty amazing that cold brew has been around as long as it has, but all of a sudden it's become like the biggest trend. And I think PJ's probably served cold brew for the very first time somewhere in the early 80s.
Whoa. Yeah. Cutting edge. So you go around and you educate franchisees about coffee. What's that process like?
So I do something called the Coffee 101. And if you ever find yourself in New Orleans, love for you to visit, and we can set something like that up. And essentially what I do is, you know, we do it here at my facility. We start off with just a tour of the facility, which I can tell you that it's very, very few people have had the opportunity to actually walk around in a coffee manufacturing facility. So it's pretty intriguing to people to see raw coffee beans and see the transformation and things of that nature. And of course, the machinery is always fascinating to people. And then we leave from there and we sit down in the conference room, and I'll do a presentation that takes you from farm to cup. And then this is an interactive thing. So, you know, the more back and forth dialogue we have, you know, I can't put everything in the presentation and I can't think of everything to say, but some of my best Coffee 101 classes have been with people that just have a lot of questions, you know, and it just kind of triggers things and makes you think of, oh yeah, by the way, you know, you can come up with other things. And then once we're done with that, we finish it off with an actual cupping. And so now that person has had the full experience of understanding farm to cup and what it really means and what it entails. They've seen the roasting process happen, and now we're actually talking about nuances in the cup. And I purposely I switch the coffees up, but I always make certain that it's three very distinctively different coffees so that they don't always taste the same, no matter how novice your palate is. And it's pretty satisfying to me to watch people go through that process and to see, you know, the light come on in their brain, like, you know, and then they really, you know, indulge in it. So we do that here. And then right before, literally just before COVID hit, I think we were able to pull off like 3 classes. We started doing it at our Maple Street Cafe, which is our flagship cafe. That was our original location. And we have like a little sort of a conference room in there that we started putting offers out on social media, inviting customers to sign up for it. And so it goes a long way. And I think that, you know, you can look at it as sort of a sales opportunity, you know, if you will. But I kind of look at it just as an investment. If people have chosen to give us consideration as their coffee of choice, then, you know, I don't really find any purpose in, you know, being so secretive. I love the fact that we're transparent and we, you know, we share everything with, you know, with our guests and all, because we don't have any secrets. We just want to do it, you know, the right way, and, you know, offer a good cup of coffee. We'll show you how we do it.
That's awesome. We're about out of time, but I wanted to ask you about your favorite coffee flavored one, the wedding cake one. What does it taste like? Because I don't think of a specific flavor when I think of a wedding.
Well, so when you think of wedding cake, the dominant flavor is going to be almond. So if you think of almond and vanilla, that's kind of how that flavor comes together. And I tell you what, my biggest struggle with flavored coffees is a lot of times flavored coffees can be called something that brings one thing to mind, but then when you taste it, it's completely different. And that's sort of a letdown for me. So the flavor coffees that I have, you know, kind of fallen sort of in love with are the ones like a wedding cake, where it tastes like almond, you smell it, it smells like a wedding cake, you know. And so I call those like authentic flavors, you know, where the name describes exactly, you know, what it tastes like. I mean, if I say something like snickerdoodle to you, you have no idea what, you know, what to expect with something like that. So yeah, wedding cake, and I think the other one for me is probably our king cake, which obviously we do at Mardi Gras time.
Yes, that's, well, king cake's a lot of cinnamon too, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny because cinnamon is, cinnamon by itself, nah, but cinnamon as in, you know, a main ingredient in a lot of different flavors, even for like, you know, especially for like Christmas time and whatnot. So you have we have a chocolate cinnamon that we did for Christmas. We have cinnamon hazelnut we did for Christmas. So cinnamon, you know, and bananas Foster is a big one for us. And when I tell that to people, first thing they say is, I'm not sure how I feel about bananas and coffee, but, you know, cold brew. Cold brew kind of turns those flavor coffees into like a liquid dessert in the cup.
Yeah. And you taste the rum and all of those.
Yep, exactly. So, okay.
Well, I need to go get some coffee now because you've inspired me. I wish there were PJs nearby.
I have that effect on people, by the way.
Quality. Thank you so much, Felton Jones, for taking the time. And I will see you in New Orleans someday.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Take care.
You too.